On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the news this week, the report heard round the world. The Baker-Hamilton Commission calls for an American about-face in the Middle East.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is no magic formula that will solve the problems of Iraq.
Situation in Iraq is grave and deteriorating. Violence is increasing in scope and lethality.
I don't think Jim Baker and Lee Hamilton expect us to accept every recommendation. I know they expect us to consider every recommendation.
Mr. Gates, do you believe that we are currently winning in Iraq?
No, sir.
Right now, NASA has just made a stunning discovery. Scientists say they believe they have found flowing water on Mars.
It was here that the greatest generation was forged.
James Baker lays out the challenge. Co-chair Lee Hamilton is grim for the Iraq Study Group. Also this week, a very candid Robert Gates is confirmed as defense secretary. New evidence of water on the Red Planet, and marking the 65th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack, survivors gather for the last time. This hour, On Point, our news roundtable goes behind the headlines. We have a terrific panel with us today. From Washington, David Sanger, White House correspondent for the New York Times. David, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
Also in Washington, Jonah Goldberg, contributing editor at the National Review and columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Jonah Goldberg, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom, David, and Jonah.
David Sanger, first to you. You've been right in the thick of reporting on the Iraq Study Group and the Bush administration's pushback this week. You described today what you call James Baker, former Secretary of State, delivering a public tutorial to current Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. What's the nature of that tutorial as you see it?
Well, I think, Tom, it's fair to say that when you read the report in its totality, it's 96 pages, you get a very different approach, and I would argue a very different worldview, out of Secretary Baker and Lee Hamilton, his co-chair, and the eight members of the commission, than we have seen out of this administration and out of Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State, and others there. A couple of elements of that. Mr. Baker's made pretty clear from the beginning that he believes you talk to all of your adversaries, even if you don't believe you have the greatest leverage at that time. That leverage comes along with the negotiations. And that if the talks fail, it serves a purpose for you. The Bush administration's view has been you isolate bad actors and try to organize the world around them. Secretary Rice has been the most passionate of those in the administration, arguing for democratization to be a medium and long-term goal for American foreign policy and organizing principle. If you go through those 96 pages, I defy you to find the word democracy anyplace. It is a very hard-headed look at how you would go negotiate a way out, including the central finding of the report, which is that we change our approach to the Iraqi government from as you stand up, we stand down, to if you fail to stand up, we also stand down.
Jonah Goldberg, so here we are. James Baker talking about talking to Iran, flipping Syria, combat troops out by March of 08. Could be, they say. David Sanger reports that Secretary of State former James Baker has made little secret in private that he regards the administration as a, quote, bunch of, quoting David Sanger, bunch of diplomatic go-kart racers more interested in speed than strategy and prone to ruinous crashes. So are we flipping Syria or flipping the Bush administration attempting to with this report, Jonah?
It sounds to me like David has got the divide almost exactly right. The only thing I would sort of add is that I think, at least from my perspective and a lot of the perspective of a lot of conservatives or hawks on the war on terror or whatever you might want to call it, is that in many respects, Baker represents a pre-9/11 worldview that that foreign policy is something to be negotiated, that deals can always be made, differences split, that there are all sorts of compromises to be had. And the Bush administration, despite quite a few flaws in implementation that I think everyone has to concede, still sees this, the post-9/11 world, as a world where the United States is at war. War with who is a more complicated question, but I think they see Iran and Syria as enemies, and not just merely adversaries across a negotiating table, but true enemies against, you know, as part of an existential threat in the war on terror. And if you believe that paradigm, then it's very difficult to argue for sort of back to 1990-style negotiations. And I think that's where you're going to see, at least from the right, a lot of opposition to the Iraq Study Group, is that its fundamental assumptions go back to an era that a lot of hawks don't think we're in anymore.
Jack Beatty, Jim Baker might say, yes, we need some pre-9/11 worldview here. Look at the post-9/11 worldview. I mean, the pre-9/11 worldview was the taunt to people who opposed the Iraq War. Now we've had a bunch of that war, and almost everybody, Jonah, you included, as I read you, say, look, it was a mistake, even if you're, in your view, Jonah, a worthy mistake. But Jack, here you saw these quite augustly resumed men and woman, Sandra Day O'Connor, saying, we've got to get off this 9/11 beam we've been on. We've got to get back to something older, more traditional, more familiar, more workable.
More workable, but I don't think that their idea is workable. I mean, their basic conception. The report assumes, it seems to me, what needs to be analyzed and argued, namely that our troops are protecting the Iraqis and advancing our national interests by being in Iraq. It seems to me we're not protecting anybody. That's what the papers say every morning. We're acting as a shield, you know, for a Shiite government that's seen not only as illegitimate but as persecutory by the Sunnis. And that's driving the insurgency. We're driving the insurgency by backing this government. We're producing more recruits, forcing the Sunnis back on the insurgents for protection, and in Anbar province, forcing them back on al-Qaeda. And as for the larger picture, as the intelligence community has said, we are recruiting more terrorists beyond Iraq by being in Iraq, deserving our national interests in reducing the spread of Islamic terrorism. You know, the report would have U.S. soldiers being killed in Iraq for years. The one estimate is it could take 5 to 10 years, General McCaffrey said, to train adequately the police and army. And think of that. As combat forces are reduced, they'd be more and more vulnerable. Vulnerable to what? I mean, my gosh, to kidnappings, hostage takings, beheadings, a parade of horribles that would happen to our soldiers. This report just doesn't get to the fundamental question of, are we doing more harm than good, even to the Iraqis, by being there?
So, David Sanger, it sounds to me in some way now, we now have a two-front or a three-front war. I mean, there's the battle in Iraq, there's the battle over what to do about it, and that battle has now come right home, as you describe it, to a kind of standoff or challenge between these worldviews. Jim Baker not backing down at all yesterday as the president sort of pushed away their main recommendations. Let's listen for just a second to Baker before the Senate Armed Services Committee warning lawmakers, and I guess by extension the president, not to cherry-pick this report.
I hope we don't treat this like a fruit salad and say, I like this, but I don't like that. I like this, but I don't like that. This is a comprehensive strategy.
A folksy metaphor, too. But David Sanger, he's saying, Mr. President, take this whole thing. Condoleezza Rice, take this whole thing. Lots of lines being drawn in the sand here.
Well, we saw him, a group of reporters saw him right after that testimony, and there was no fruit salad on the table. He has made it clear, and the other members of the commission have made it clear, that what they think is lacking in the administration's approach right now is a comprehensive, integrated strategy, one that has an element of coercion in dealing with the Iraqi government, as I described before, one that has an element of diplomacy throughout the region, in part to convince moderate Muslims that we are working for something other than regime change and invasion, but that in fact we are making progress toward solving Israel and Palestine and their differences. And then a third element of this, which of course is the military part, where they clearly believe that one needs goals, if not exactly timelines, and they decided against timelines. They think that without each of the three working together, the system falls apart. And that's why you're hearing about fruit salads.
But as you write in your own reporting, David, what we see here is a, as you put it, remarkable condemnation of a sitting president's policy. I mean, is this at the policy level anyway, the Civil War come home? Do we have a kind of Mexican standoff in Washington now? What happens if we do?
You do, but you know what's interesting about this commission is that in 1 month's time, we have moved from a partisan debate of the Democrats say are in favor of either withdrawal or phased withdrawal, or it depends on which of 17 Democratic proposals you look at, and the Republicans are lined up behind the president. Now you see an enormous split within the Republican Party because you saw many Republicans line up behind the commission's bipartisan approach. The fact that it was a consensus view, whether you think the commission had good or bad conclusions, they had unanimous conclusions, means that there is a defined middle ground here.
We're looking at a week in the news this hour with the Baker Commission, Iraq all over, water on Mars, and more. My guests, David Sanger, White House correspondent for the New York Times, Jonah Goldberg of the National Review, Los Angeles Times, Jack Beatty's here as well. The president, speaking yesterday with Tony Blair at his side, responded defiantly to a BBC reporter's who asked the president why he had waited so long to say publicly that things were going so badly in Iraq.
Make no mistake about it. I understand how tough it is, sir. I talk to the families who die. I understand there's sectarian violence. I also understand that we're hunting down Al-Qaeda on a regular basis, and we're bringing them to justice. I understand how hard our troops are working. I know how brave the men and women who wear the uniform are, and therefore they'll have the full support of this government. I understand what long deployments mean to wives and husbands and mothers and fathers, particularly as we come into a holiday season. I understand. And I have made it abundantly clear how tough it is.
Tough and angry President Bush, but is he in touch? In touch with what? British Prime Minister Tony Blair at his side stressed the Baker-Hamilton report did not say cut and run.
There isn't any doubt about how tough it is. It's hugely challenging. But what the report did not say is that we should just get out and leave it. What it did say is that it's immensely important that we succeed. Now, the question is, therefore, how do we do it? And in that regard, I think the report is practical, it's clear, and it offers also the way of bringing people together.
All right, there we are. David Sanger, cut and run, get out. What did this report say? I mean, when you cut through it all, it's been described by the Weekly Standard as disguised surrender. So is it, you know, is it at some fundamental level hang in there, or is it basically get out?
It's cut and walk. It's train and slowly retreat as you do it. I mean, the key military element of it is to increase by probably four or five fold to about upwards of 20,000 the number of American troops that are dedicated to training Iraqi troops. But unlike the president's past efforts in this regard, the report says if this training fails, we pull back anyway. We keep doing some training, but all 15 combat brigades, the ones who are out on the streets getting picked off each and every day, that they are either pulled back to bases or pulled out of Iraq by the first quarter of 2008. Now, that's not a very rapid withdrawal, but it's also not a very slow withdrawal. To get that number out, and that's about 70,000 troops, or pulled back by that date, you would need to be doing it, you know, relatively early in the next year to begin the process.
I mean, it's not that slow. So, when we look at what happens in Iraq in a year, and not that much has improved in the last year. A lot's gone downhill. If to imagine American troops out in another year and a few months doesn't seem that far away.
It doesn't, and that's why I say it's cut and walk.
Jonah Goldberg, what do you finally see at bottom in this report, and what about the kind of new center that may have been established here, but also the new divides that David Sanger describes running right into the Republican Party around policy now?
Yeah, well, I think the report is ultimately an analytical embarrassment. I mean, I think this idea that somehow it's a better military or diplomatic or geostrategic plan because they got 10 people to agree on it rather than 9 or 7 or 6 is sort of absurd on its face as a matter of logic. The idea that somehow what makes it good is that it's bipartisan, which is what Baker and Hamilton both led with. I mean, that was what they thought was the key selling point on it, was that everyone agreed on it. Well, if it's a bad policy, who cares if everybody agrees on it? What I think is sort of lost in a lot of this talk about how, you know, you were saying earlier, it's a stinging rebuke and it's a condemnation of the president and so forth.
I'm reading the headlines. That's what I read all over.
Obviously, you can find that in there. And in some senses, it's certainly a stinging rebuke of where we are now. But if in going forward, at least on the military side of it, there is really nothing that astoundingly new. There are all of these weasel word, you know, escape clauses in there about depending on if events change and so forth. And while Baker and co. may be eager for Bush to take the whole thing, how could he say otherwise? You know, I only hope you take the one, you know, some of my ideas. The whole point of the thing is that he thinks the whole thing is brilliant. But there's nothing that binds Bush to doing what he doesn't want to do in this thing. And it seems to me in some ways Baker has helped Bush as a political matter. Because, as David was saying a moment ago, the debate used to be between get out now, sort of MRTHA plus, and stay the course. And now the debate is the minimum bar now is stay at least until 2008, with all of these opportunities for adapting to the situation as we see it.
So he's pushed the plank out a little further for the president.
Yeah, pushes the plank. It also allows Bush to do the things in the report that already jibe with current Pentagon policy. And there are a lot of things that jibe with current Pentagon policy in there, and say, look, I'm following the Iraq study group's recommendations. He doesn't have to sort of do the Israel stuff. It's a political no-brainer to me that he should do the things that he's already doing and saying he's following the bipartisan Iraq study group's recommendations and ignore the rest of them. And I think in that sense, it has sort of expanded the shelf life of Bush's policy. The problem for someone like me, and I think, you know, or someone like Jack, is I think that if you think this thing is doomed to failure, if you think it's
this
really
thing being the
bad,
war or this Iraq study
the
group's
war, the war,
okay,
the,
okay.
The Iraq project writ large, if you think it is doomed to failure, then I think John McCain is wrestling with this point right now as well. Then it's a real moral dilemma, because stay the course is probably the worst course of all possible courses. It's worse probably than cut and run. Pulling the Band-Aid off slowly till 2008 is sort of immoral. It's going to get a lot more Americans killed. And if it's bound to fail, why not get out now? And if you think it can succeed by only putting more troops in and we're not going to be able to do that, then this sort of slow walk to death is in no one's interest. And I think McCain's position at this point, I think McCain is inching towards some sort of, you know, fish or cut bait position. And I think a lot of hawks are moving that way, because if you just follow the Iraq study group report, it's a slow walk to failure rather than a quick walk to failure.
Jack, I want to get you on that, but I want to hear first, we got a little tape of John McCain here, who was saying, I think with George Stephanopoulos last week, that to stay in as we currently are is immoral, to have American soldiers getting picked off without, of course, he wants an even bigger effort, an effort to win. This week, John McCain again rejected calls for a drawdown of U.S. troops in Iraq.
My studies and figures show that they are available for sustained deployment, at least in order to get the situation under control, number one. And I want to tell you something that I know that you know. There's only one thing worse than an overstressed Army and Marine Corps, and that's a defeated Army and Marine Corps. We saw that in 1973. And I believe that this is a recipe that will lead to, sooner or later, our defeat in Iraq.
Senator John McCain there. All right, Jack Beatty, here we've got lots of people jumping on the Iraq study group. We've just heard you jump on them. Jonah doesn't like it. Senator Alan Simpson said this is what will happen. We'll be hit from both sides. Are we too quick, though, to push away what they put forward as the central accomplishment of bipartisanship here? You could hear in these old war horses, has-beens, James Baker jokingly self-described the group, but yet very prominent ones. You could hear their yearning for a country to rally together here to figure this out. Is that not worth something?
It's worth something, but look at the commission. I mean, virtually everybody on this commission, I think everybody, they didn't have the wisdom to oppose the war in the beginning. Whether they were all for it, I don't know, but they certainly didn't oppose it. Secondly, the people they heard from, at least glancing at the list, I don't see many prominent fundamental war critics there. And third, there is a sort of Washington auto congratulations here. You see it in Leon Panetta. He's just thrilled that these old-timers can get together and agree on a program that when, I mean, I think Jonah gets to some of the real problems with it, that when you look at it as an actual plan, it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. Either it's not going to be done by the Bush administration, the regional conference with talking to our enemies, I don't think that's going to be done, or it's not even analytically accurate. The diagnosis is all off, as in, well, we'll just train and we'll stay, and that I think we're far past that. We're into some Hobbesian world there, the war of all against all, and this is nothing that U.S. forces should be involved in. And you know, so that you say, well, what does it accomplish? Well, it makes these people feel good. It makes them feel we have a consensus. That group has a consensus, but I think that it would be a mistake for Democrats, as they seem to be doing, to be getting behind this out of a desire to slam the president. That seems to be what they're doing. They're saying, oh, we're for this, and we're really for it, because look at how critical it is of the president. They don't want to get behind something that just doesn't make any sense may criticize Bush.
Mm, tough. Let's listen here to an interesting exchange between James Baker and Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, now independent Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman. Lieberman saying he was skeptical about getting Iran and Syria involved. We'll hear first here from Senator Lieberman.
I'm skeptical that it's realistic to think that Iran wants to help the United States succeed in Iraq. Why is there any reasonable belief that the Iranians should do any of the things that you think they should do? And if they do, won't they ask us an unacceptable price, which is to allow them to go ahead?
Develop nukes? Yeah.
Exactly.
Senator, thank you. That's a very good question, and let me answer it this way. First of all, we specifically exclude any linkage to the nuclear proliferation issue. We say that should not be taken up in any discussion we might have with Iran. You're saying, why should we approach them? There are two reasons, in my opinion. One, we did so in Afghanistan, and guess what? They helped us. If we ask Iran to come and they say no, we in the Iraqi government, and they say no, then we will hold them up to public scrutiny as the rejectionist state that they have proven to be.
And there's the argument unfolding on Capitol Hill. A lot of listeners want to join us. David Sanger, Jonah Goldberg, Jack Beatty, please stand by. Craig is calling from Leesburg, Virginia. Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Brief comment. I believe that it was a mistake getting it in the first place. Okay. The problem I have is that we're there, and we just simply bungled it from the start. And it just blows me away that we've made such drastic mistakes.
So what now?
What now is this report, as far as I'm concerned, I welcome it because it seems to address the situation from somewhat of a broad political standpoint. And I just don't see the current administration being able to adopt or take on this because fundamentally it just gets down to the if they accept it, they will be implicitly admitting that they've been wrong all along.
What if they don't think it will actually work? Should they adopt it just for the sake of bipartisanship?
Well, you know, the actual details of it, I don't think I'm qualified enough to look at these details bit by bit by bit.
Yep.
All I can say is I'm looking at it from a broad geopolitical point of view, and as an overall encompassing thing, we need to change. I mean,
we hear it, and we hear how it's unnerving to see the country's power elite, in a way, so at odds with itself. I mean, Jack, Jonah, yes, if they're all together and wrong, that's not good. On the other hand, David Sanger, this is kind of an extraordinary spectacle, and I'm not sure how it resolves itself. Here you've got James Baker, friend of the Bush family, certainly to Bush Sr., so tough in the face of a sitting president. We're told the neocons are kind of dissipated and no longer driving here, but how do you resolve it when a country's political elite, even within camps, seems so divided? How do you move effectively ahead?
you know, that's what we elect presidents for. And in the end, as Mr. Baker and Mr. Hamilton said to us repeatedly, this is an advisory commission. It binds no one, least of all the president. I think that the commission was trying to, on the one hand, create the president some political room and political cover to move, in part by creating some cover for Republicans who had had no place to leave the White House position until this week, to give them a place to move and hope the president would follow. On the other hand, they tried to box him in. And they tried to box him in by saying, you take it all or nothing, as we discussed before.
Mm.
And so now the president, in whatever decision he makes, whatever way he goes, he will, as he is wont to do and has done before, say, look, this is the right strategy. And you obviously wouldn't come out and say, I think perhaps this will work. He will come out in definitive tones. And every decision he makes will be compared to the recommendations in the study group and engender a discussion. And that doesn't mean the study group is right or wrong, doesn't mean the president is right or wrong, but it means that there is now a set of views out there to which every presidential decision will be compared. And they are not a set of views that one can simply dismiss as something that was developed for the political opportunism of being an opposition party. So that's going to make this a much more interesting debate in the next couple of weeks.
Waited until after the election and then let her rip. Jonah Goldberg, you say this is a pre-9/11 perspective, but then what I saw Washington Post headline this week, the revenge of the realists, the foreign policy realists here. How or why should the country, though, embrace the neocon view when you're also saying, well, it's a pretty bad screw-up in the way this thing has been done? I mean, where's the country supposed to turn between these poles?
Well, I mean, there the use and abuse of the word neocon on a lot of this stuff is something that I've written a lot about and sort of gets my goat.
Yeah, but let's not quibble. We're looking at a war that's all messed up, and you know who was in charge when we got there.
I understand, and I think I think this administration has made profound errors, but I don't think that that. Simply because James Baker and crew call themselves realists, that means they are all of a sudden being realistic. The idea that somehow countries like Iran can be bargaining partners or negotiating partners is as idealistic as anything else.
We're talking today about a week in the news. We're joined by David Sanger, White House correspondent for the New York Times, Jonah Goldberg, contributing editor for the National Review, columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Jack Beatty's with us as well. Co-chair of the Iraq Study Group, Lee Hamilton, was right there Wednesday laying out the terrible cost of this war in Iraq to Iraqi and American lives, to the American economy. He made it clear even the best course of action could still prove bloody, ugly, costly.
Many Americans are understandably dissatisfied. Our ship of state has hit rough waters. It must now chart a new way forward. No course of action in Iraq is guaranteed to stop a slide toward chaos.
Alex is calling from Franklin, Tennessee. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? I wanted to say that the report that we just got here is a great display of politics at its best, because it is hysterical to think that the Pentagon did not think of all scenarios and options prior to going to the war for us now, the same people who were contemplating going to the war, coming up with this report and saying those things that, I mean, they could have asked me back then, and I could have told them what we could do.
So when you say politics at its best, is that a compliment or an insult?
It's a showcase. It's just politics. Politics has its own... there is an interest. Whatever the interest is, I mean, I don't want to categorize it being negative or positive, but it is... It's not fair to tell us that this is the report that answers to all the wrong or the right doings.
Yeah, you see and politics think, and maybe not enough more. Let me get another call here. Alex, thanks for being there in Tennessee. Let's go to Beverly Hills, California, and Charles. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hi. Good day. Instead of all the diatribes about what we should do. Should we cut and run? Should we stay? Should we train the troops? Why do I never hear conversations? And why didn't this Baker Commission have conversations about the reasons for which we are there, which is, and I'll paraphrase Bill Clinton, it's the oil, stupid.
Okay, so if it is the oil, David Sanger, what does it mean? Was that invisible? You've read this report more closely than I. It's hard to imagine James Baker of Houston not thinking about the oil. Is that still at the bottom, and does it matter if it is?
The only place oil comes into this report is in a description of what needs to be done to get oil flowing again in Iraq so that the Iraqi reconstruction can be self-sustaining and the government can have a source of revenue. And so there is something to spread among the Shia, the Sunnis, and the Kurds as you try to reach a political reconciliation. The commission members decided early on that this is not a retrospective commission, that they would not be like the 9/11 commission to figure out what went wrong in the past, that they would not be like the space shuttle commissions to figure out, you know, the history of broken decisions that resulted in calamity. They decided that they were going to assess the current situation and come up with recommendations for where to go from here. So you'll find nothing in it about the decisions leading up to and the causes of the war.
Though that's implicit in line after line, the remarkable condemnation you described. Jack Beatty, when this panel talks about the risk of regional conflagration, that is in a way, I guess, code for oil. I mean, regional conflagration means, you know, we read $5 a gallon gas and who knows what.
Yes, and the idea of foreign participation in the war that they say we have to head off, that one of the reasons we're there is to prevent the kind of decomposition of the whole society that would invite intervention from Iraq's neighbors. Well, of course, we're far along there already. It just came out last week that Saudi businessmen are financing the insurgency. It's now self-financing. They don't have to rob banks and do whatever else they are, even extort hostages. They've got plenty of money from these Saudi businesses. Our oil, all from Saudi Arabia, and we know on the other side that the Iranians have not been shy about aiding their part in it, the Shiite side. So there already is that foreign intervention taking place in the shape of explosive devices, in the shape of money, and other kinds of support. I mean, I suppose it would get worse. It could even take the form of foreign intervention. But there you get to the issue of, wait a minute now, what if something like that were to happen? If the Iranians were so stupid as to march into this country, and they wouldn't be, what would prevent them? Well, what could prevent them, as John Murtha and others have said, is a robust U.S. presence in the Gulf to prevent that by way of air power or whatever you want. In other words, we can defend Iran's borders from foreign aggression. We can't even now defend subversion of Iraq against subversion.
You say we can. That's if Iran marches in. But if it seeps in, and there's seeping in right now, that may be a different story. But what to do here? Serious people trying to do something. Bettina is calling from Boston. Hi, Bettina. You're on the air.
Hello. I am calling from Boston, and I wanted to take umbrage with the remark of one of your early panelists that they were not on your program, that the panel itself was not idealistic. I don't see how anyone can say that.
They're not idealistic?
Yeah, they said that they thought that they were being idealistic in their recommendations.
Oh, I see. Sort of naive, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Naive. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. How can you say that when you look at the records and the work that these people have done? I mean, I never think of ever using the term naive or unrealistic for O'Connor, or realistic. I mean, Baker, the same thing for Baker.
I mean, these are some pretty august resumes, some pretty substantial.
You use the term yourself, yes.
Yep.
And also, of course, the bipartisanship and the fact that they reached agreement so quickly on a number of issues, and the only one they seemed to have trouble with was the question of the timetable for pullout. So that was one thing. I really thought that was off base. And the second thing is, talking about post 9/11, everything being post 9/11, that's the great danger of this whole thing. And I think this country, as we all know, has been making decisions that are scary. If you look at the policies that our founding fathers set up, And they're using post 11 as an excuse.
Yeah, and here's a big panel saying essentially that. Jonah Goldberg, you've got Lee Hamilton there, and as Bettina says, and these are hardly people who are easily dismissed. And he's saying not just the Iraq War is in trouble, but our ship of state is in rough waters. And that seems to point right home, as Bettina says, and to say, well, what's going on with the way this country's governed?
Yeah, well, I just strongly disagree with a lot of that. I think, as the earlier caller, you know, noted, this is a fundamentally political commission. It had James Baker and Lee Hamilton and whoever else on that commission decided very early on, clearly, that their mission was to come forward and come up with a unifying political approach for the United States of America.
But it's a political country. It's a democracy. Being political doesn't mean it's not worthwhile.
No, right? I have no problem with that. But, you know, political does mean, in the context that I am using it, for domestic political consumption. Its chief selling point was that they got this League of Extraordinary Pals to get together and all agree on something. And that was how they sold it. If you watch that press conference, Leon Panetta, Baker, Hamilton, O'Connor, all of them, that was their selling point, was that they all agreed on it. And agreement is a wonderful thing, but it doesn't make it right. And my point is simply this, is that their mandate was to find a solution to the Iraq problem, however defined. And I think that there are very few analysts who think that actually exists in that document. If all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. These guys are the modern-day equivalent of smoke-filled room negotiators, and they think all of this can be sort of negotiated away. Nowhere in that document is there any discussion of actually winning in Iraq. It just doesn't come up. They don't define it. Instead, it is a way to sort of lose slowly and allow the political class in Washington to save face.
But James Baker said straight up, he said, there is no victory here. We're trying for some kind of success. Hang on a second, Jack. Now, what about this? I mean, Lee Hamilton, when he looks back and says the ship of state is in rough water, you may not like the prescription for Iraq, Jack, but these are serious people, and they're looking home and saying, we've got a problem here, and you can hear our listener Bettina saying that's resonating with her.
Well, I think it's resonating with a lot of people. I mean, clearly they're being candid within their lights. And there's an interesting sidelight to this. That commission, when you look at it, you've got Jim Baker, who said years ago that George Bush started out as a clerk at Baker and Botts in Houston, and his condescending views toward the president are well known. You've got Alan Simpson, who's a very close friend of the former President Bush. You've got Larry Eagleburger, former Secretary of State for Mr. the first President Bush. And, of course, you've got Mr. Gates, another Bush person, Bush 1, coming into. So there's this sort of picture of almost a pattern in Mr. Bush's Junior's life being repeated, that you know, he gets into trouble and his dad bails him out. And this seems to be part of this machinery here, the way this commission has been set up and the kinds of advice that they're offering, that it almost seems like it's trying to put the president down, or at least remind him, as he can't help but be reminded, that he's in a position psychologically and biographically that's very, very familiar. He screws up and daddy helps him.
Whether the rescue works is another question, but the dynamic was pretty hard, pretty clear this week. Sean's calling from Columbia, Maryland. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have a question about training Iraqi forces.
Yeah.
What are our objectives of doing that? What our own troops are doing in Iraq right now that we expect Iraqi forces to do that after training?
That is a good question. David Sanger, Sean asks, okay, if we can train them up, what is it that we expect them to do exactly that American troops aren't trying at a bloody cost, 33 already in December, in this first week? I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to fight each other? What's the goal that they will fight for?
It's a good question. The essence of having a single and unified government, and I don't think at this moment that we would say Iraq has quite gotten there, is that a government needs to have a monopoly on the use of force. Mm. right now, this government does not have a monopoly on the use of force.
On
not
the contrary.
Even close. We have the Shia militias that are obviously roaming the streets and controlling some entire districts of Iraq. You have the Sunni insurgents who are continuing to fight. You have some al-Qaeda there as well. And the concept here is to turn the government's forces into a fighting force that would have the discipline and the unity that they would be able to restore the force of a central government. We don't know if that's possible because it requires bringing into the fold many of these forces that are militias right now and that who may not feel as if they have as much loyalty to a government as they do to the militia group from which they are now members. And that's a tough problem.
Jonah Goldberg, what do you think your wing of the conservative neck of America is going to rally around at this point? John McCain, pour a whole lot more troops in there, train up the Iraqi troops. Where's the new... I'm not even sure how to subdivide conservatives today, but however you define your vein of it, where is it likely to throw its support?
That's very hard to see. I mean, I think that it's a long gray fog ahead of us. Certainly, most everybody who's hawkish on these sorts of things about the war on terror, who takes, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, from some of the callers, this notion that somehow using the post 9/11 world as a cudgel and as an excuse to do things and all that kind of stuff. I think that's basically a fundamental charge of bad faith. There are people, they may be wrong, we may be wrong, but there are those of us who actually do believe that this is a real war, hard to define, harder still to fight. And that, but it is a war and brings with it certain certain risks and certain responsibilities in terms of how to fight it. And, you know, it's not as if the neocons, whoever people want to call them, were clamoring to amend habeas corpus or create Gitmo, and they're just using 9/11 as an excuse to do it. They actually
really?
Believe
mm-hmm.
some of these things are necessary. And I think right now McCain is probably the best spokesman for that position. The problem is that I think a lot of conservatives have problems with him on a whole host of other fronts.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jack, how do you see this, I don't know what to call it, Donnybrook among the political elite over Iraq now settling itself?
I think that there was a column this week by Bob Novak reporting on his talking to Republicans, and I think that this gets to McCain's problem. I think they have a real problem, which is they want this war to back down before they have to go to an election on it. And McCain, I think, is most vulnerable on this, which may be why he wants something drastic. He wants lots of troops now, a surge
punch
now,
mm-hmm.
to be able to quiet things down and maybe prepare the way for withdrawal. I don't know that another division is going to make any difference there at all. But his position in 2008, if he's going to go to the voters who just said they just basically repudiated the war. Latest poll shows 70% want U.S. forces, all U.S. forces, out in 2 years. If John McCain in 2 years goes and says, no, we have to stay the course there, we have to put in more troops, I don't think that's a winning. And he's got problems with the right on other matters. I think that's a problem with the general electorate.
Jonah Goldberg, just got a few seconds here. Is this going to end up being solved at the ballot box? It looks a long way off now if you're an American soldier in Iraq.
Oh, I will predict this, that Iraq will still be the number one issue in the 2008 election. How it will be framed, only, you know, time will tell.
Well, what to do? A big week, a big report. It's hard to turn our eyes away from Iraq with everything, even with everything else going on. But what to do about it? Wow, a mystery and not a nice one. Jonah Goldberg with the National Review and the Los Angeles Times. Jonah, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
David Sanger, White House correspondent for the New York Times. David Sanger, real pleasure to have you. Thanks for your thoughts and your reporting. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Always good to be with you.
Jack Beatty, good as always to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.